Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolecast. And Bud, it is time to have a little bit of a victorious bowl look back. So kind of an interesting game. We didn't really feel the need to have an immediate reaction just because of some of the surrounding circumstances. But we'll kind of have a podcast that serves as a review of the game, what we can take of it. And then we've got a couple listener questions here and some broader material that we'll kind of transition into as we work our way through the pod. Want to start by thanking Louisiana Hot Sauce, as we do always. Fantastic partnership for us. Fantastic product that we're able to talk about for you guys. I have used this throughout many a meal I've made for the holiday season here. Honestly, it's almost embarrassing how much I have almost become reliant upon using this, but it's a fantastic product. We love it. We've been able to use it going into year two now, and just want to remind people as to the entity that makes podcasts like these possible.
Yeah, man, it's a great product, and it helps us put out another great product, the Nolecast. So appreciate them. Appreciate all our new listeners we've picked up during the holiday season. That's been a great thing to see the audience grow. And man, we got a lot of questions today, several hundred since I sent the tweet out last night around 10 o'clock. So let's kind of get through this review real quick of the Independence Bowl. Florida State comes out 42-13 winner. Man, I did not think they would win by that much. I thought they would win the game, but that was a strong performance from them, Ingram. They came out and they cared, which I thought they would do. But they also came out and they, for the most part, played together as a unit, which I wasn't sure they would do. So that to me, I think, was probably the most encouraging thing.
When you combine the effort with the level of execution that you got, it was nice to see. It was just nice to have a game where you weren't, you know, completely worried that the defensive lapse in the fourth quarter was going to end up costing you, a potential victory again. So a good way to see that season end. Just a credit to all those guys on the coaching staff. I mentioned this a couple months ago. I'm not sure that I love the job that Charles Kelly does all the time, but he's a loyal soldier and an absolute professional, and so are a lot of other people on that staff. Randy Sanders did a great job. Bill Miller, I know he's not everybody's favorite, but just a lot of people who were willing to focus, put together a game plan, and allow Florida State to salvage what was at one point one of the darker seasons this program's seen in the last three, four, five decades.
Looking at just pulling some stats out here, but so Florida State outgains 452-260, 6.1 yards a play for FSU, 4.7 for Southern Miss, and really kind of thoroughly dominated the game. And the one thing that I saw here, and this I think should be really encouraging for fans, physically Florida State was a lot better than Southern Miss. I don't think they were like much better coached than Southern Miss, to be honest. They didn't really trick them. They didn't do a lot of stuff that, in my opinion, caught Southern Miss off guard. Mm. Oftentimes, Southern Miss was relatively in position to make a play, whether that's on offense or defense, especially on defense, and just couldn't make the play. Just physically, you know, they didn't have somebody who could cover Auden Tate, right? I mean, 5 catches, 84 yards. I think all of the catches were pretty big catches. You know, Ryan Izzo was consistently open underneath and reliable. Not a ton of yards, but, you know, 6 catches for 59. They didn't have enough matchups that they could win one-on-one, right? And when every matchup across the board has to be double-teamed or should be double-teamed, that's you're going to lose, and you're going to lose big. I mean, heck, Keith Gavin was targeted 5 times. He only caught one of them, but he was open on 2 of those others, right?
Yes, he was.
They really just didn't have physical answers. And you look at them, and I do think this is really telling here. Southern Miss, especially on defense, they gave Kentucky and Tennessee all they wanted. Now, they lost those games because their offense isn't that good, but they really did. And the talent differential between FSU and Tennessee, I think it really shows, man, because I don't think Florida State had some genius game plan. They just came out and physically they couldn't handle Cam Akers. They couldn't handle Auden Tate. Southern Miss got, like, no pass rush against Florida State's offensive line, which everybody thinks is terrible. That was encouraging. And James Blackman, for the most part, made really good decisions. 18 of 26, 233, I mean, 195 yards. His best game, I think we can say, as a quarterback so far? Probably. Well, other than Delaware State, obviously. That was the first time he'd had a QB rating over 165. other than Delaware State. So a really nice game by him, 9 yards an attempt, just a physically dominating performance. And, you know, what do you take away from the bowl game? You take away that Florida State still has a bunch of talent. And that's encouraging going forward. You know, there's no other game to be played this year. So I'm not looking at this game from a perspective of, hey, what do they need to change to get ready for next week? None of that. I thought defensively they did a good job too, man, of overcoming some of the guys who weren't playing in the game. And it was nice that T-Mac ended up playing in the game because I think he had a pretty good game.
Yeah, he played pretty well. Only other major thing that I took away from the game, Bud, and this is a not of great substance per se, but I'm just happy that 91 didn't pick up an injury. Happy anybody didn't get injured. But when Derek Naughty decides to play, love him for it. The effort and the productivity you've gotten from that guy and what he's done for his draft stock. Just happy to see that he was able to partake and not pick up any kind of injury. Jacques Patrick putting him in the same boat. Just nice to see a day that doesn't look like it's going to have any kind of long-term or even medium-term impact on people, whether it be preparing for next year or preparing for Indianapolis or any kind of a postseason, you know, like a Senior Bowl or any type of situation that would let those guys better display what they have for the next level.
I don't know why Nooney Murray didn't play. That to me was kind of curious. Certainly
whispers about maybe concussion issues. I heard a couple different things about that. That anytime Nooney's involved with anything, I lift my eyelid a little bit. But that was curious. I agree.
Hopefully he's not deciding to go pro. He's not a guy who would get drafted, in my opinion. Not at this point. I mean, given the issues and the lack of production.
Yeah, that would be humorous. I mean, yeah.
How many yards did he have on the season? That's
minimal.
Not a whole lot. 604. He was their leading receiver with 604 yards.
I think going into the Delaware State game, he had like 335 yards on the season or something. Look, whenever I say something like that.
Did he have a big Delaware State game?
I think he had.
Oh, wow, 53, yeah.
Didn't he have 65?
For him, that's pretty big.
Yeah, so he picked up. He picked up a lot of his yards at the end of the year.
Full disclosure, I still have not watched that.
if Nooney's going pro, okay. I appreciate it. Thank you for the memories, Nooney.
If he is, if he is. We don't want people.
Well, yeah, no. I'm not saying he is. I'm just, if he is. Good
no,
for
you. No, I got you. I didn't want other folks to say, Ingram saying that Nooney's going pro. You know, that type of stuff. Because some people podcast about our podcast.
I've heard that's what some people, that's their blueprint. Let's see. Anything else we really want to talk about the bowl game? We had a ton of questions. A lot of it, you know, pertains to coaching staff and coaching search and staff composition. But anything else that we look at and walk away from the walk-ons Independence Bowl?
Sure. Well, I think it was cool that Deion showed up as Odell Hagan said, "Hey, I want y'all to meet my former roommate." That was kind of nice, and to get Deion to drive over, you know, 3 hours in the cold. That's awesome, man. I'm sure those kids love that. And you know, a lot of people think Deion's all about himself, but you know, that was good for him. He didn't have to go take his time out at his day to go drive over there and do that. And it was not a fun bowl to go to. I mean, it was cold and looked miserable. It was nice of him to go over to do that. And I was proud of Odell Higgins and thought he had a great postgame speech as well. I also thought the Willie Taggart interview was interesting. He was very, very assertive and said, "Hey, look, I don't think you're going to see huddles anymore in Tallahassee."
Right.
For people who are like, "I don't know how fast Willie Taggart's going to go," right? And they look back at some of his Western Kentucky and some of the averages at USF before he switched to this new system. I'm pretty sure he's not going back to the system that almost got him fired at USF.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think he's probably going to stick with what just got him the job at Florida State. And his comments seem to indicate that. "We want to go fast. We're an up-tempo team. We want to push the issue. We're not going to huddle anymore." If he's planning on running some kind of medium tempo, he's certainly not talking like it. So that's encouraging. I don't think he's going to be like a top 10 tempo or something, but you know.
I thought that was by far the biggest thing to take away from that little time. As far as the Deion stuff, nice to see him. Nice little pregame speech you got from Deion. Obviously, there's been a lot of interest and a lot of questions surrounding what his involvement with Florida State football might look moving forward. I know that there's some reports out there that he's being seriously considered as potentially joining like the coaching staff. I don't see a world in which Deion Sanders would be a traditional like a one of your 10/11 guys on a coaching staff. Maybe there's a place for him as a as a consultant, or where you have him involved in individual tutorial 2 days a week or something like that. But I don't see him being a DB's coach as a realistic possibility, and I don't see it necessarily as a real good idea. Just my personal opinion.
I totally agree with you there. And the reason is he's got a pretty good job with NFL Network, and he's already a multimillionaire, and these assistant coaches work their butts off. I mean, you're talking about 100 hours a week, and I know—
You're talking 15-hour days, 6 days a week. And, right. And with another— It doesn't mean you don't do anything on the seventh day either. I'm just— That's—
And out of the spotlight.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, like his profile would go down, not up. Look, I know Deion has a legendary work ethic. You talk to Mickey Andrews. Mickey Andrews will tell you, Deion's the hardest worker I've ever had. That's a pretty good compliment come from Mickey Andrews. He had a lot of pros come through this program. But at the same time, that was working when he had to get somewhere because he had a big-time goal. I'm similar skeptical with you, man. I don't think that he's going to be like the DB coach on this staff. And I'm not so sure that, look, given what we know and given his current situation, I don't know if it would be the best idea even if you did want him. He doesn't have any college coaching experience, and I'm not saying Deion couldn't do it, but there are probably more qualified guys. Being a great player does not necessarily make you a great coach. Look at Michael Jordan. Hell, Lawrence Dawsey was a really good receiver, especially at the college level. That didn't work out so well here.
Deion works his tail off. I don't have any doubt about that. He's certainly worked his rear end off in the athletic field. You don't play two professional sports. I personally can tell you that I've worked at the same TV station with Deion 5-6 years ago. A guy works his rear end off in that field as well. He's, cause there's a lot of things that go into coaching, and a lot of it is ability to at least buy into some type of hierarchy as well. And I would have real concerns about how that would work. So look, Deion being involved in the program at a greater level, I think can only be a good thing for Florida State. I just don't know that that's necessarily as your defensive backs coach.
I totally agree with you there. Also, look, here's the problem. If you hire alumni, how do you fire them if you have to?
It's a challenge.
How do you fire Deion Sanders?
I'm not comparing the two as a player, but honestly, this makes what Terrell Buckley's done all the more impressive. It really does.
Terrell Buckley wants to coach.
Terrell Buckley.
That's what that shows me. He went to places
and went to Akron, Ohio, to be a coach. Absolutely.
And into Louisville, and into what, Mississippi State?
Yeah. So he's
done that. To me, is a guy who's putting in the time,
putting in the work, done what was necessary. Absolutely.
He was a student assistant. Then he was a GA. Then he worked with the weight training staff. And then he went to Akron to coach corners. And then he went to Louisville to coach corners for 2 years after 2 years at Akron. And then he went to Mississippi State for the last 2 years. Right. That's a guy with 6 years college coaching experience, and he's been in the college game, for a decade now. To me, that's just different, man. Like that is a guy who I'm more comfortable hiring, despite the fact that clearly, like you said, Deion was a much better player. And look, Deion's going to be a better player than any DB coach we bring up.
Deion will be a better, and not just a better player. Cultural icon is way too strong of a phrase, but Deion is a transcendent figure where you don't just look at him for how good of a defensive back he was, despite the fact that he's probably quite possibly the best defensive back to ever play the game. He also is just such a larger presence than that in general. So I'm not comparing the two at all. I just want, the more that I look at what Terrell Buckley's done, it's incredible, and it's really, really impressive what he's done to plant himself into the college game.
Okay, Anger, we have another question here. What's up with the defensive coordinator search? I don't know. I really don't. Back when it was going to be Jim Leavitt, I think we all had a pretty good handle on that, and then that huge curveball came that he was staying. And I don't think that was expected on the Florida State side at all. I've seen stuff about Jim Leonard, the Wisconsin defensive coordinator. If that's the case, I would expect Leonard to not really address the rumors. And look, they have a bowl game on, was it New Year's Eve or New Year's Day? When did the Orange Bowl? So it's the 30th. As far as I know, I think Willie Taggart is actually in Oregon moving the rest of his family back to Tallahassee, which is what he said he was going to do in his opening press conference right after Christmas. Obviously, with the bowl game now being done, we've heard the Scott Schaefer stuff. To me, that would be interesting. He clearly was not real good at Syracuse, but he also was trying to run a system that didn't really fit Syracuse's players. I would take a look at Tony Porcaro. I think the guy's done a really good job at Southern Miss, not only coaching, but building that roster. Now, is that a hard sell after you drop 40-something on him in the bowl game? Yeah, I think it probably is. But at the same time, you know, they didn't look unprepared on defense. They just got physically beat. And they better get beat like that, I guess, if you want Florida State to play to its potential, because their recruiting is in, what, like the, you know, in the 60s, and Florida State is number four in the nation over the last 4 years. I think there's probably going to be some other names as well. You know, we've heard the Mike Elko, but I never really thought he was going to leave Notre Dame for Florida State, to be honest. Notre Dame could pay whatever they want to pay, and he's already making good money at Notre Dame. We've heard the Travaris Robinson stuff. We'll have to see if that's legit. I have to think that Will Muschamp would try to fight to keep him a lot, but who knows? I do think they're going to get a good guy there at defensive coordinator, and in part because of the guys he's already hired on staff, you know, Raymond Woody and Telly Lockett and those guys. If you're a DC coming in, you look at those guys and you say, man, I know Florida State has studs, but we're going to have some studs to coach. The talent level of Florida State is not going to take a dip. And that's big, man, because look at the guys who have had this coordinator job. Mark Stoops got a head coaching job. Jeremy Pruitt eventually got a head coaching job. Charles Kelly, didn't happen for him, but it looks like he's going to land on his feet on Jeremy Pruitt's staff there in Tennessee. The Florida State DC job is a really good job, and you can do some extremely good things here. I think they're going to get a good guy, and I think they'll have the guy, you know, early in the new year, which is what Taggart said last week.
Another question, Bud. We've had a decent amount in inquiries surrounding a wide receiver coach. Ron Dugans seems to be a lot of alumni talk on this podcast, but Ron Dugans is a name that has been kind of swirling around for the past 2 weeks or so. Where do you think Florida State stands with its wide receiver coach, and do you see it being anybody other than Dugans?
I at this point, no, I don't. I think Dugans is the most likely guy, and I think that, look, they're going to make him say no, and I don't think he'll give you his final no or yes, at least officially, until after the bowl game. Because you're not going to bail on your kids 2 days before the bowl game.
Nor Richt. I mean, he's got a hell of a relationship with his head coach.
Yeah, exactly. They're extremely tight, like in like a family type way. Yeah, so I think Dugans is likely to be the guy.
Offensive line coach?
Looks like Greg Fry. May end up being the dude. He's at Michigan right now. Obvious Florida State connection there. Maybe he wants to come home. That could be really interesting. Mm-hmm. I think that'd be a pretty good hire off of Jim Harbaugh's staff. And to get him to come home could be pretty sweet, man. Ingram, this really does fit with that alumni talk. Fry was on FSU's national title team in 1993, graduated in 96. You know, he was there during the dynasty days. He's not that old. That could be interesting. And I think it's interesting because a lot of the stuff that Taggart does blocking-wise is still a lot of the Harbaugh stuff. Now, the formations they do it from are different, but they're not necessarily running the crazy wide offensive line splits. They are putting their receivers really far out. So having a guy who understands what Harbaugh wants to do in the run game, which is largely still what Willie wants to do, I think would make a lot of sense, assuming they can get him to come. And that would be maybe he could be the run game coordinator as well. Now, would he coach tackles and tight ends, or would he coach the whole offensive line? Because looking at this, I think obviously you already have Telly Lockett as your tight ends coach. I think you would probably just put Greg and give him the whole offensive line.
Yeah, I would expect that. Might even work with a tight end some too. Who knows? Offensive line coaches tend to spread their responsibilities, tend to like to make sure everybody's on the same page.
Also, I mean, you know, how much tight end is Willie Taggart going to use? Probably less than Michigan does.
Mm-hmm. So, of all the questions we received, one of them surrounding the future of someone that might run behind a potential Fry-coached offensive line. So, Kalon Laybourne made his way out to Shreveport and then was no longer part of the team activities at some point in time. I don't know that it necessarily means that his time with the program is done, but it's certainly something that has piqued a lot of people's interest and has had a lot of people inquire as to exactly what his status with the team and the program is right now.
Yeah, I don't know, to be honest. I mean, I've heard a lot of different rumors. There's one to me that makes a lot of sense, but I don't necessarily want to say it because, mm-hmm. you know, that it could paint the kid in a bad light, and I'm not going to do that if I don't know it to be 100% true. I don't know. Look, if he
does it involve maybe sending him home for his own benefit.
Yeah, that's the one I was talking about. But I don't know that, right. So I'm clearly not going to go with that. You know, certainly he was not the only redshirt kid who was not at the bowl game. I will say that. So I this idea that he did something wrong necessarily, I don't know that. That's I don't know. I think he'd be kind of silly to leave if he was leaving, because I mean, they're going to have a really good offense next year, like a really good offense, and he's probably going to get to touch the ball a lot. He fits this spread system very well.
Very well. Very well. I don't think I'm not saying necessarily it's going to be with the program. There's a lot of uncertainty here, but I don't think he's planning. I mean, your process to leave is to not go to Shreveport, Louisiana, and then make that decision, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's definitely different.
Wish we had absolute information. Wish we could tell you with certainty here, but look, there remains a lot of ambiguity with what's going on with Laybourne, and we'll certainly keep you up to date. But with as many people that inquired and email, tweets, everything else that came in, we did want to do our best to at least acknowledge that and give you as much of a up-to-date situation or as up-to-date information as we had pertaining to what was going on with the running back out of Virginia. All right, bud, good a time as any to remind our listeners as to our friends at Madison Social. I mentioned the For the Table app last time. You could get food, possibly even booze delivered. That is as big of a game changer as I can remember. I think that thing goes live on January the 7th, so just keep that in mind if you're a student returning back to Tallahassee around that time. That's a nice little convenient thing to have in your quiver there. Also want to remind people that Madison Social / For the Table Restaurant Group, the locations down College Town, are the only place in Tallahassee that will have New Year's Eve midnight fireworks. So, again, we praise them for a lot of things, but their involvement in the community is one that always stands out to me. And just another reminder that if you're in Tallahassee for New Year's Eve, probably no better place. In fact, there is no better place to spend than Centrale Township or Madison Social.
Absolutely, dude. That is an awesome thing. Get the app. Also, you can go to madisonsocial.com/gear, and you can get a lot of their stuff. You obviously have the like the Thank God, Mickey Andrews, Bobby Bowden, Mama shirt. Also have the Badasses and War Daddy shirts, hats, and koozies. Maybe we'll get some of those to give away, by the way. That could be pretty cool. And also the Have a Great Day If You Want To shirt, which is that to me is a Willie Taggart statement on attitude and how you control your own destiny. So there's some agency there.
Again, just want to remind people as to the For the Table app, the fact that they will have Tallahassee's only fireworks, live fireworks, midnight fireworks there on New Year's Eve. And always point people to all the new things that they're doing with merchandise and the two shirts that you mentioned there. Yet another great addition to the line of product that they've brought to the fan base recently.
All right, next question here. Will Taggart lean into anyone else on the staff to share play calling, or will he do it 100%? Got another question about, do you think play calling will occupy too much of Taggart's thing? Look, I didn't really have a problem with Jimbo calling the plays. I just had a problem with it taking forever to actually get them called. I don't think the plays Jimbo called are bad. He just didn't call enough of them. He just thought that he could pick the perfect play, and that he basically thought that his play calling was more valuable than the talent on the roster getting more snaps. Mm-hmm. And it just wasn't true, right? Like, he wasn't so good of a play caller that it made sense to limit how many snaps your superior talent got. And in almost every game, Florida State had superior talent. Jimbo just mucked it up. So here's how it worked at Oregon. Taggart would essentially okay the play, and you would have a guy in the box working a couple plays ahead. So let's say it's second and seven, right, from, I don't know, like the 40. You'd have a play call ready to go if you got a first down. You'd have a play call ready to go if you ended up in short yardage, and you'd have a play call ready to go, let's say, if you had an incomplete pass or took a sack, yeah. Right, you know, so something for your mid-long range stuff. That's the thing, the working ahead, you'd chat about it ahead. That way, you whatever the situation was, you'd already be ready to go. That's the thing. That, like, if Taggart wants to run a bunch of plays, and every comment he makes seems to indicate that he does, and I think that's the smart thing. Running less plays is bad. More plays is good if you have better talent. You want to, you know, sort of like in blackjack, right? If you're counting into a favorable deck, you want to play more hands, not less. This is, you know, back before the time of you know, six deck shufflers and shoes and whatnot. So I do think he will have somebody up in the box working ahead on play calls. That's how they did it at Oregon. I think that's how they'll do it here. I'm not worried about Willie Taggart calling plays, but a lot of your best offensive coaches call the plays. Look, Dan Mullen calls the plays. I'm sure he'll keep doing it in Gainesville. You know, Chip Kelly calls the plays. He's an excellent offensive coach. I'm trying to think, you know, there's a bunch of guys. Mark Richt went back and started calling the plays again for Miami after saying that's one thing he wished he didn't get away from at Georgia. One of the reasons you're bringing this guy here is because his offense has been very successful over the last couple of years. I don't worry about the guy calling the plays. Now, the thing is, you have to have some help doing it. And I do think that was an area where, at times, Fisher got bogged down. You remember, you know, I'm talking about just like staring into the play sheet like that?
You remember the sequence of events captured at Clemson where Jacques Patrick gets tackled short and you literally see Jimbo Fisher watch his running back get tackled, the ball get spotted, and then start that play process. It was something that I remember on the instant reaction. I spent about 3 minutes talking about just because the cameras happened to capture this whole thing kind of in time, and Florida State ended up having to burn a timeout, and Fisher yelled at everybody. But you literally saw the play search process start with your third down or fourth or second down play. I don't remember exact details, but there's no better encapsulation of what you just talked about in the comparing and contrasting the two. If you want to go back and look at a painful Clemson game, there's a series of events that kind of spell that out as well as we possibly could.
Absolutely, man. So that to me is something that they will end up doing, is have somebody help him work ahead. Now, as far as what type of game manager, I don't know how to describe somebody as a game manager. Like, is this question asking, like, is he good or bad? Or, I don't know. Maybe we'll get some clarification on that question. I'm sure people will have follow-ups to what we just talked about there. Here's something. Will the defense suffer due to the new offense? If you look at the traditional metrics, like points per game and yards per game, almost certainly yes, because more snaps are being run. If, however, you're an enlightened fan, and I think most of the podcast listeners are, that's why advertisers love us, by the way, because we nail that 20 to 45 age group, college educated, mm-hmm. driving to a job, you know, making some money. That's why the podcast advertisers love us, because y'all are bright. And that's we try not to talk down to y'all on a show. If you look at the tempo-free stats, so points per drive, yards per drive, yards per play, points per play, things that take into account how many snaps are being run in the game, so defensive efficiency, then no, I don't think the offense means that the defense needs to take a step back. Also, I think it makes a lot of sense to run more plays because you're going to have to use your defensive depth more. You know who else is? Every other team you play. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Those guys don't have Marvin Wilson as a third stringer. They don't. When those legs get tired, see, teams playing Florida State this year, and I've talked to some coaches who coached against Florida State this year. Number one, didn't really have to respect the QB run game at all, and not even as like a threat, as like a just didn't have to respect it even as a potential option. Number two, man, they go slow. You don't have to rotate your guys against them. You can play your starters a lot of the game. That's not going to be the case anymore, I don't think. If you play in Florida in that heat, I don't want a team from North Carolina coming down here and be able to play their starters the whole time. I want to get into some of that kind of that soft underbelly and expose it and say, okay, ACC team, you may have some decent starters. You may have some really good starters going to get drafted. How are your backups? Let's test those guys out. You know, let's see your backups try to cover Auden Tate or Nudie Murray or get blocked and then try to get off a block and tackle Jacques Patrick or Cam Akers. You know, that's something to me. You know, look at Clemson. Clemson's a pretty up-tempo team. Their defense doesn't seem to be struggling over this. Why? Because they continue to get studs. Oklahoma's defense did struggle some. Why? Well, Oklahoma's recruiting dipped. They actually are not a blue-chip ratio team this year. They're only about at 45% range. Florida State's in that upper 60s range in terms of how many, you know, blue-chip kids they sign. If you're in Iowa and you can't get a lot of studs, it makes sense to go really slow. If you're Florida State and you can get studs, it makes sense to leverage your depth, because your depth is better than the opponent's debt. In fact, Ingram, follow me, make sure this makes sense, because in my mind it does. Hopefully in a radio form it does. I think the gap between Florida State starters and NC State starters is actually smaller than the gap between Florida State's backups and NC State's backups. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And that's long been the case. You know, you can feel the, you know, you, especially if you're a school in North Carolina, or you can field a pretty good first team. You really can. It's the real disparity is what your second team and elements of your third team look like. So I think you're absolutely right on that. I'll just add one more wrinkle to this, bud. And this is a small thing in the grand scale, but I think it'll also benefit your defense because of what you practice. I mean, it's not good necessarily to practice against an offense that it takes all day to get the play call in, and it's great to have some variety there. And I think there's some more things to come out of this based off what we just talked about. And I think the idea of seeing a little bit of variety in practice is going to be a good thing for the defense as well.
So think about this, right? It's not that they only practice against a pro-style offensive practice. I know people listen to this like, well, but guys, they go against the scout team. That's true. But how good is your scout team at running, you know, a bunch of spread concepts if your main team is a pro-style team? I don't know.
Have you seen us ever implement a spread concept, mini spread concept successfully under the previous regime? So do you think we're ever able to really replicate that in practice? That would be my question.
Yeah, probably not. Now, Ingram, check this out. What does Clemson run?
I'd call it an accelerated spread. It's certainly not the days that Chad Morris being there, but they don't go slow either.
They're not lining up with like a fullback and a tight end, though.
No.
And they're pretty up-tempo. Certainly, that's how they beat Alabama. They ran like 100 play, or what, 99 in that game, I think it was. Think about what is Florida run now. They're not a slow spread team. Miami is going more spread and more no huddle. You have Syracuse in your own division. NC State kind of runs a lot of different stuff, but there's certainly, with what Drinkwitz does there, there's definitely some spread stuff. Most of the teams that you have to beat on a yearly basis are running the spread. I do think it'll help your defense to see that in practice. You're exactly right. There's no team on your schedule that's any good that's lining up and running traditional pro-style stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely something to think about there. What else we got here?
Listener question comes in about roster management and how Taggart may handle trimming the roster at times.
So APR-wise, I don't know that Florida State can just have massive cuts right now.
I almost mentioned this last podcast. It's worth revisiting the APR for those of you who haven't looked at it in a couple of years. It's not Florida State's not in dire situation, but it's not the best of circumstances either.
APR, for those of y'all who don't know, is academic progress rate. If it dips too low, you can have like scholarship or bowl issues. I don't think Florida State's in jeopardy of doing that. If they cut a bunch of kids off the roster, then maybe they would be. I think there will be a couple of kids who will transfer because they don't necessarily fit the new offense. That's certainly possible, and that makes some sense. I think there'll be some kids who transfer maybe because their attitude or behavior doesn't fit what Willie Taggart wants. That's all about culture flipping. That happens. Anytime a new coach comes in, you're going to have some transfers out. I don't know that you can have like massive slicing 10, 12 kids off the roster, even if maybe they should. And there are certainly some kids on the roster who can't play. And there are some kids that I would probably cut off this roster if I was trying to make the locker room and culture a better place, to be fully honest. And maybe some kids who you don't shed a tear if they go pro early. But I don't think he can afford to just do massive cuts off the thing, no.
Second question or third question comes in. Nick writes, how, in your opinion, will scheduling be changed with the new staff? In Nick's opinion, the ACC schedule plus UF is more than enough currently with what Florida State is asked of it and trying to make a playoff appearance.
Well, I don't know that Willie Taggart's going to have any say over scheduling more than Jimbo did, to be honest. I mean, that's sort of the AD's job, and I'm sure the head coach can have some input, but I don't expect to have massive scheduling type changes now. Do you?
I think his input maybe weighed in a little bit. Maybe if you're looking at scheduling one of these marquee opening games of the season. But no, at Florida State currently, the the head coach is kind of that was one of the things that frustrated Jimbo. The head coach is more or less told what it's going to be, and the things follow from there.
And part of that, I think, is ticket sales, right? You have to be able to find a way to get people to Tallahassee, and that Tallahassee is such a remote place. People don't seem to realize this, but it's just very difficult to get people to come to games from out of town. So you have to have good matchups, and you also got to get the money in. They're not a, you know, as we saw with A&M, that the coffers at Florida State are a little bit different than some of these SEC schools. My thing is just schedule smart. It's not a mistake to schedule Alabama. It is a mistake to schedule Alabama in a year in which you're already playing Clemson and Florida on the road. If you're going to schedule a big-time marquee non-conference game, especially at a neutral site, do it in an even-numbered year where your only big road trip is Miami. So that way you still get two big-time home games. Florida State's home schedule this year was trash. Mm-hmm. You know, people weren't excited about it, to be honest. Because I think they were excited because they thought the team was going to be really good, but they weren't excited about the teams coming to Doak. You know, Louisville, NC State, Miami were kind of your best three, and if that's going to work out, you need two of those three to kind of exceed expectations, and only one of them, the Hurricanes, did. Just stop scheduling the big-time games in the odd-numbered years, because understand how your schedule is. Two of your three toughest games on a yearly basis are Florida and Clemson. Don't give yourself a third huge game away from Doak, in my opinion. I'm looking at here. Are there any other screw-ups that you know of?
Not a major one. In that game, to Boise still on the schedule, in theory?
It looks like Boise State in Jacksonville on August 31st. They're opening the year in Jacksonville in 2019.
And we don't have a return trip in 2020?
2020 at Boise State. Okay. Yeah. I'd be surprised if that Boise State game sticks, to be honest.
I would too, but we've said this for like 2 years now.
That's true. Looking here, now they do have, you think we'll still be podcasting in 2036?
Who?
2036.
That would be interesting.
18 years from now, I'll be 50. I don't know. Maybe we'll still be.
Maybe.
That'd be pretty cool.
Louisiana hot sauce right there at our side, and maybe a live show from Mezzo when we're just old, creepy-ass 50-year-olds. That would be fun.
Dude, that could certainly happen. Maybe I'll wear a braided belt. All right. So at Boise State in 2020 is kind of – it looks like as bad as it gets as far as your non-conference stuff. But, yeah, that's an even-year game. They do open with West Virginia in Atlanta that year. So you're not going to have a whole lot of home games in 2020. You do get Florida and Clemson in Doak, though. See, that's what I'm talking about. You can get away with this if you have FSU or Florida and Clemson coming to Doak. It's harder to do if you do it in an odd numbered year. So if I'm Willie Taggart, that's what I want. I said, hey, I understand we're still going to play these big time games. Please schedule them in even numbered years, not odd numbered years. Mm-hmm. And I understand, by the way, that Florida State, all three national titles have come in odd numbered years, but that's kind of flukish, right? I don't actually like your chances of going to Clemson and Florida and still winning a national title. That's not great odds. Although the counter to that, I think, is, well, if you go there and do it, then you're probably a national championship quality team.
Well,
sure, but you could also be that quality of a team at home.
Yeah, I'll also add the Clemson of the 1990s are not the Clemson of the 2010s. So that's a
– Right, 100%.
You got to – I mean, they were a good program, but not at all what they are right now. So wouldn't look at it that way. But one other question that we had surrounded Keith Gavin. I think this is in part some of the frustrations that individuals might have had with lacked ability to be able to bring down a couple balls against Southern Miss. But in your opinion, what obviously this is not like a hard and fast or a straight answer, but what ultimately becomes of Keith Gavin and does Florida State, are they in a place to be able to get the type of production that would pair with his talent? Or is that something that ultimately we look back and wonder why we weren't able to have more from that type of athlete?
Keith Gavin did not get the red shirt, right, in 16? Or did he? I'm trying to recall here because this is going to impact my answer a little bit.
I don't think he did.
No, he did not because he ended up playing a lot of special teams. Because remember, during the bowl game.
Play the bowl game, yeah.
Keith Gavin, by the way, is a very strong argument for the idea of allowing your red shirts to play in the bowl game without blowing their without blowing their thing.
Because
I think Keith Gavin's going to be a really good player in this offense. I think if you're Willie Taggart, especially if Auden Tate goes pro, you're looking at Keith Gavin, you're saying, man, that kind of speed, that kind of size on the outside, my offense is going to create a lot of one-on-one matchups down the field. I've seen Keith Gavin do this in high school. I know he's done it some for State. He's also had some disappointing drops. I think we'll coach him up better. I think we'll ask him to think less and be more instinctive. And that's the big thing to me. I think they're going to ask Keith to do what Keith can do and try to put him in a better position, right? This, especially early on, I think this is what you're going to see from a new coach at most any school, unless he's just super stubborn. You're going to work with what you have and recruit and build towards what you want. Now, granted, I think Keith Gavin would be a factor in either plan, but you are going to see a lot of balls thrown down the field in one-on-one situations to Keith Gavin. I think he's going to start winning those. I think he's going to do better. Physically, he's a freak. That's a guy I want on my offense. I'm not selling my Keith Gavin stock. I'm still 100% buying on him.
Mm-hmm. Good. Good to hear. Kid, a lot of talent. It's not uncommon for the hype to be, the hype to be a year too soon when it comes to a lot of prospects, wide receivers in particular. Awful lot of good things hopefully still to come from Gavin, but I understand if people start to get concerned. It was a pretty lackluster year in the grand scheme of things.
Oh, no doubt. It was kind of a lost year for a lot of kids. It was almost like maybe like your OC had checked out, way early.
Maybe it was almost like that. Who knows? Bud, anything else we want to touch on here? It's kind of an odd period of time here at the end of the year. Wanted to have a look back at the bowl game and just kind of give people an idea as to some of the pieces of information that we had collected as far as what was surrounding the program. But anything else you think we should try to fit into this pod?
Somebody asked me, how well do you think Taggart will recruit? Like, will he recruit better than Jimbo did? And my answer to that is no. I don't think he will. And yet, recruiting was probably the number one reason why I wanted Willie Taggart anyway. And let me explain why both things can be true. Jimbo Fisher was recruiting, for the most part, against end-of-career Urban Meyer, right, who was having some real struggles there. Will Muschamp, who was a good recruiter, at least on defense. Jim McElwain, who was not a good recruiter. Randy Shannon.
Who you neutered. Who basically you ended that. That game, of all the games, when we've talked about this, that game was as influential in the landscape of things as any that occurred. Absolutely.
Then Al Golden, who never really got it done in recruiting. And then Mark Richt, who is doing a good job now, but his first year there wasn't necessarily the best class. And against Dabo before he had that thing totally rolling. And then Dabo did have it rolling, so you have to give him credit for that. Also importantly, against Mark Richt at Georgia, who just was not maximizing them. Now, you look at the situation Willie Taggart steps into. I think Florida will recruit better under Dan Mullen. Clemson is obviously just has it absolutely rolling as one of the premier programs in the nation. Georgia is just totally not screwing around. I mean, like, that is – I think Georgia's going to turn into the new Alabama. This class reminds me a lot of that 2008 Bama class.
Yeah, yeah. Hashtag fully committed. Fully committed.
Everybody looked around and said – whew, really, NCAA? This is going to happen? We're just going to let this happen. All right. Okay.
Just going to let them assemble a real-life dream team here. Huh. Okay.
Yeah, come get your whooping. I think that's what Georgia's doing right now. And Miami clearly has their feet under them. And I'm not saying they're going to, like, be a national title team anytime soon, but they're more talented now than they ever were when Jimbo faced them, I think. And they're recruiting really well. So, Willie Taggart has to be a, like, out of this world recruiter just to hold serve with what Jimbo Fisher was doing, because the competition level is greater now. And this is not to say Jimbo Fisher got lucky, right? This is just circumstance. If you're going to win a national title, you need some breaks to go your way. Look at what Urban Meyer did. He was recruiting against, what, Larry Coker and Bobby Bowden in the state of Florida? Like, there has never been a better situation to recruit ever than having two retirees coach at the other two main Florida schools while you clean up in Gainesville. It just happens. So, that to me is why I think Willie Taggart's the right guy for the job, because there's a lot of other guys who you could have hired who I sincerely believe would have led to a talent drop-off. I don't think the talent's going to drop off much, if at all, under Willie Taggart. In fact, I think he's going to do a really good job recruiting. But you have to, just like if you're looking at, hey, let's look at the defensive stats, you have to look at them on a per-play drive, because you have to also factor in competition. You're going to have to look at Willie Taggart's recruiting results and say, okay, how did he do? And you have to, like, account for the degree of difficulty. that's why I think it was so important that they got him, because he is such a good recruiter.
Yeah.
And he can go up against the elites and sign some kids.
Yeah. I'll just add that Tennessee is going to be involved as well. I mean, they're going to support. They're going to give Jeremy Pruitt that of which is needed to be impactful on the recruiting trail. And that's going to impact the state of Georgia and parts of the state of Florida as well.
Got to know what page of your wallet to turn to, and you got to know who to give that to. That's how recruiting works, man. You know, yeah. Kids don't magically find rides out of nowhere.
Absolutely.
And at Tallahassee, that's really important, by the way, because that's not an easy place to get to. Mm-hmm. You got to make sure you have reliable transportation, right? That's very key. Let's not sugarcoat this.
No.
You got to make sure kids can get on campus.
It's also worth, as I've been as critical of Jimbo Fisher as anybody. Jimbo Fisher, he did a lot of good things. He was one of the best recruiters ever.
Yes, he did. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And I would take those 7 years again, wouldn't you?
Oh, Lord, yeah.
Even how they ended? Absolutely. You take it, no doubt. And if you could sign up for another 7 years like that, you would do it. The problem is that offer wasn't on the table. Mm-hmm. Those 7 years weren't coming back.
Well, good little honest way to in the podcast with a look at the college football landscape and what it might look like over the next 5 or 6 years. A lot of interesting things. There's a lot of schools that kind of are in Florida State's sphere of influence that are also very much committed to playing at the highest level. And I think Florida State is going to fare just fine on the recruiting trail, and in any kind of non-drop-off, I think you have to appreciate and realize the situation with what collective and surrounding landscape looks like. So just something to keep in people's mind.
Oh, hey, we got one more question. Will Willie Taggart play more younger players? The answer is yes, because they're going to play more snaps, which means you're going to get into your depth more. I know that I kind of addressed that on the earlier question, but I just figured I'd get back to that because I saw that. But yeah, that's he will play more younger players because they're playing more snaps. You have to, because your depth is usually younger players.
Mm-hmm.
5 stars on iTunes, y'all. Definitely, we passed the 1,500 five-star review mark, Ingram.
That's incredible. It's remarkable.
More five. Yeah, that is. We like those. Obviously, a lot of y'all are already given one. I think you can give another one at some point if you gave one a long time ago. So certainly, we like those, and you know, we aim to continue to be the best FSU podcast out there. And we put podcasts out when there's news. We'll do more mailbag stuff. We also have a catch-up episode we're going to do. That is essentially, we've had a couple people email us, hey, what do you mean by this? What do you mean by that? Those type of questions. Maybe, we've been doing this for, what, 6 years, 7 years now?
Yeah, 7 years, I believe.
Been a while. So there's certain things in the podcast that we probably reference that are just our long-running jokes, or long-running kind of just things that we know. If we say something that confuses you, shoot us an email, thenolcast@gmail.com. And I'm going to put together a show, because we have grown, you know, significantly in the last year. I mean, have that many listeners is just absolutely insane. Certainly, we say some things that people may not get. And we want to catch up all our new listeners. So we're going to have a catch-up episode. Kind of, hey, if you heard Bud say this and it doesn't make sense, or you heard Ingram joke about this, it doesn't make sense, we're going to fill you in. So shoot us those. When we get enough, we'll probably end up doing a show like that. We'll be right back.